probably telepathic messages, hmm? From other minds deep in thought.
Listening to the radio at the same time.
And this radio simply makes audible something that you thought was inaudible.
Network, this is the news. This is Tom Rowe live in Acre with the not live in Acre. I don't even know where I am anymore. I'm live in Hudson. Definitely Hudson. The church bells just rang. I'm in the basement of the First Presbyterian Church on Warren Street, live in Hudson. We're going to hear from Sarah Henstresta today, the assembly person from Ulster County, who is up in arms about Central Hudson and their proposed rate increase. They want to charge you like an extra dollar a day for electricity, an extra dollar a day for natural gas. But they have to go through the Public Service Commission first, and they say they're going to hold the Public Service Commission a actual in-person hearing. They finished holding the first round of online hearings yesterday. But we're going to hear all about that from Sarah Henstresta this morning on the WGXC Morning Show. We've also got Philip Grant with local news. We've got the national headlines from the Public News Service, and we've got the better weather from the Catskill Maker Syndicate. It all starts in just a moment with the local news. Stay tuned to the WGXC Morning Show.
WGXC Acre, 90.7 on your dial. Also online at wavefarm.org/WGXC.
You can find out about so many local events, like the traditional Irish music session. Every Sunday there's an open Irish music jam at the Shamrock House in East Durham from 2 to 5 p.m. Find out more on the WGXC community calendar online at WGXC.org and add your own event to the WGXC community calendar and have it read on the radio at 90.7 FM by going to WGXC.org and clicking on the community calendar.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by Upstate Films, where membership provides access to world-class cinema, first-run feature films, art house films, live music, and more. Plus, advance notice of close-up conversations with directors and actors and other special events at the Star Theater in Rhinebeck, the Orpheum in Socrates, and traveling around the Hudson Valley. Information at upstatefilms.org/support. That's upstatefilms.org.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Jeff Economy of Kingston, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXC sustaining supporter today. Go to WGXC.org and click Donate. Thank you for your support.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre with the WGXC Daily News for Thursday, September 21st. Go to the WGXC newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about any of these stories. Joshua Solomon reports in the Times Union that on September 20th, Governor Kathy Hochul signed a bill that allows any New Yorker to cast their vote by mail. Hochul said, quote, "It's finally time to allow people to vote by mail. Why not? What is so sinister? Why would this be attacked? What are you afraid of?" Unquote. Representative Elise Stefanik leads a Republican lawsuit filed in State Supreme Court of Albany County September 20th against the measure. The lawsuit says the state's constitution only allows absentee voting in cases of not being in your registered county on election day or an illness or disability. Stefanik said, quote, Kathy Hochul and extreme New York Democrats are trying to destroy what is left of election integrity in New York, unquote. But Hochul framed the issue differently, saying, quote, there's a more sinister slow-motion insurrection going on, a little more under the surface, perhaps, than what we saw on January 6th. It's happening quietly in Republican legislatures all across America. They're stripping away these rights. They're doing the exact opposite of what needs to happen, unquote. Voting by mail was used nationally throughout the COVID-19 pandemic with few reports of any problems. The bill Hochul signed also expands same-day voter registration and requires officials at prisons to provide voting rights information when prisoners are released from incarceration. And the new law also creates a penalty if an Electoral College elector votes against the will of the people. Read more about this story in the Times Union. Andrea Macko reports for Porcupine Soup that New York State Senator Michelle Hinchey is definitely opposing Central Hudson Gas and Electric Corporation's proposal to add another dollar a day in cost to gas and electricity customers' bills. Quote, Central Hudson should not be considered for a rate increase, especially while it's actively under investigation by the Public Service Commission for ongoing billing malfunctions, unquote, said Hinchey in a letter submitted to the Public Service Commission, which will approve or deny the price hike. Quote, attempting to resolve their shortcomings by burdening customers with higher rates is an unjust and unacceptable approach, unquote. Joe Holly, Vice President of Regulatory Affairs for Central Hudson, has said, quote, we believe that this proposed rate plan is essential to address our infrastructure needs, recover from the impacts of COVID-19, and ensure that we can respond effectively to extreme weather events, which are occurring more frequently, unquote. Public Service Commission is also investigating Central Hudson for bill practices the last several years. And she said, quote, Hudson Valley residents still today face issues with inaccurate and inflated bills, large automatic withdrawals from their savings accounts after not receiving bills for many months, unclear and confusing bills, and others receiving multiple bills in 1 month. Until Central Hudson has resolved these issues with its billing system, a rate increase should not be an option on the table, unquote. Read more about this story in Porcupine Soup. And New York State of Politics reports that Governor Kathy Hochul moved the state's presidential primary to April 2nd this year. No matter what date New York picked, it would likely conflict with a coming court date for the current leading Republican running for president, Donald Trump. A hush money case, a criminal case, could be going on in Manhattan. An election stealing case could be on in Georgia, and there are also two federal cases against the former president and two civil trials in New York. The Manhattan trial is currently scheduled to begin on March 25th. None of the other candidates for president face court dates that might conflict with their campaign schedules. Read more about this story at New York State of Politics, and read more about any of these stories in the WGXC newsroom at wgxc.org.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Republican leadership of this House is incompetent. I mean, they're so incompetent it takes my breath away. They're letting the clowns run the circus.
Democratic Massachusetts Congressman Jim McGovern is ripping into GOP leaders for letting extremists run the House less than 10 days before a government shutdown. Republican senators are also growing frustrated with House Speaker Kevin McCarthy's inability to pass spending legislation blocked by a small group of hardline conservatives. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell says shutdowns have always hurt Republicans.
I've seen a few of them over the years. They never have produced a policy change, and they've always been a loser for Republicans. Politically.
Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer is bringing three military nominations to a vote despite a block by Alabama Republican Senator Tommy Tuberville over a Pentagon abortion travel policy. Schumer says Tuberville is abusing his power and disrupting the lives of military families.
The Senate should not have to go through procedural hoops just to please one brazen and misguided senator. But this is where we are.
The Federal Reserve has decided there won't be an interest rate hike this quarter, but signaled there might be one later this year, depending on inflation. Attorney General Merrick Garland told House Judiciary his department pursues justice without fear or favor, even when investigating former President Donald Trump, current President Joe Biden, or Biden's son, Hunter.
As the president himself has said, and I reaffirm today, I am not the president's lawyer. I will add, I am not Congress's prosecutor.
At least six states are looking at banning voting tabulation machines, but not Connecticut. In fact, advocates want Governor Ned Lamont to replace outdated scanners with new, more reliable machines. John Erlinghauser with AARP Connecticut says the current models can jam, meeting lines on election day and pressure on poll workers.
They don't manufacture them anymore. They break down frequently. People are having to get replacement parts for the voting machines on things like eBay.
Automatic tabulators are faster and more accurate than hand counts. The nonpartisan Make Elections Fair Committee is pushing to amend Arizona's constitution. Their initiative would end partisan primaries, making them open to all candidates and voters. And it would give voters the chance to select more than one candidate, possibly having that choice influence who makes it to the general election. Committee Chair Sarah Smallhouse says the current system is unfair to independent or unaffiliated candidates and voters who are the state's largest single bloc.
It's fundamentally a question of fairness, of giving everyone equal opportunity to participate in our political system.
Finally, Biden and leftist Brazilian President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva reaffirmed their shared commitment to protecting democracy. Biden and Lula, a former union leader, also announced an initiative for working people. I'm Alex Gonzalez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. September 19th, the John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act, restoring protections stripped from the Voting Rights Act by the Supreme Court, was notably reintroduced by a black congresswoman from Alabama. Representative Terry Sewell, whose own state recently defied a U.S. Supreme Court order to create a second majority-minority black district, introduced the act after the previous Congress failed to act on the bill in 2022. In 2013, the U.S. Supreme Court gutted the preclearance requirements in the 1965 Voting Rights Act in its Shelby County v. Holder decision, ruling that states with a history of voter discrimination no longer needed to clear their proposed voting laws with the Justice Department. The Brennan Center reports that since then, 29 states have passed 94 restrictive voting laws, including at least 29 laws in states that were previously subject to preclearance requirements. The John Lewis Act restores those preclearance requirements and strengthens Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act, allowing voters of color to bring court action to protect fair representation. Alabama's refusal to create a second black district as an example. In the current Congress, the John Lewis Act and its companion Freedom to Vote Act have hurdles, but passage would take giant steps in restoring the freedom to vote for all Americans. We have the text of the John Lewis Act and groups taking action at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Thursday, September 21st. Heads up, we got a lot in today's report. Local early morning temperatures range from 40 degrees in Steventown to 52 in Voorheesville. But that is a bit of an anomaly. Everywhere else is closer to 40 degrees. And this morning, around 5:15 a.m., I watched the temperature sensors from the New York State Mesonet, provided by the University of Albany, drop to 32 degrees in Old Forge. So, just for fun, I broke out the Better Weather Distance Calculator and cross-referenced the National Weather Service WPC Probabilistic Winter Guidance, and today's closest possible snowfall is 2,000 miles away, west of Idaho Falls in Idaho. Alright, bringing it back home, we're seeing foliage changes accelerate, 20% predicted in the Greene County Mountains. Ulster and Albany are looking at 10% change, and the rest of us are just getting started. Regional average soil temperature is 64 degrees. We have a chance for some fog this chilly morning, and that should be gone by 9 a.m. as winds become moderate. It will be sunny, and that leads to a high temperature of 71 at 4 p.m. Overnight, temperatures dip to 48 degrees. Then tomorrow will be a little warmer, with most of the day being above 68 degrees, hitting a max of 72 at 3 p.m. Nice day to get outside before the overnight low of 54 takes us into a wet-looking Saturday with a high of 64. Rain chances roll through around 2 p.m. They continue into Sunday, which has a high of 68. Today's tide schedule is low tide at 1:53 a.m., then high tide at 7:21 a.m., low tide again at 1:31 p.m., high tide once again at 7:49 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 69 degrees and the tide strength will be low. Sunset today will be at 6:43 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 6:37 a.m. Looking way up, we see plasma winds will be average at 425 kilometers per second with a thin density of less than one proton per cubic centimeter. Long-range radio propagation conditions are currently terrible once again as we await more Hadouken interactions. Overnight will be better with fair conditions below 60 megahertz. There are no chances of aurora this evening. The current sunspot number is 159. And this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
But now on the line, I'm got Sarah Hannah Shrestha, the Ulster County State Representative, who is been busy with Central Hudson for almost all of your term, I guess. It seems like there's been one problem or another with Central Hudson.
That's right, yes. You know, issues with Central Hudson bills is the most common thing that people call our office for. And now that Central Hudson has requested rate increases that are quite high compared to what they've increased in the past, and quite high also considering the fact that utility debt is increasing all over the nation, but also especially in New York in the Central Hudson territory. According to Central Hudson's own testimony, the utility, you know, debt for more than 6 days has increased by more than 1,000%. So right now we are making sure that people know that this rate case is happening, first of all, and that they can make a comment, but also we're doing a total of 7 town halls in our district because we want folks to know why the energy system is set up the way it is and what our long-term fights can be in beating corporate utilities.
All right. So that's a nice conversation here. We can start with Central Hudson, or I guess the Public Service Commission said that there were going to be in-person hearings on the rate increases. There haven't been any yet. They had their final two online public hearings about rate increases today, right? Are there going to be in-person public hearings?
Yes, they have agreed to an in-person hearing, but they haven't secured a venue and confirmed the details yet. We don't know where it's going to be. But the rate case actually goes on for about 11 months typically, and there will be more opportunities to comment once there has been some sort of proposal for moving forward. So there will be different stages for commenting, but that's why we are sort of getting a start early, because I think the more effective people can make a case against these rate increases, the better our chances will be.
And is it true, typically utilities ask for large rate increases, not expecting to maybe get the entire amount? They're asking for like 19% and 16% on electricity and gas, I think it is. Or I got it backwards.
Yeah, so actually, to answer your question first, I don't think we can make that assumption because Con Edison just had its rate case and they got more than what they originally asked for at the beginning of the rate case. And the reason they got more is because of inflation. However, it's possible that Central Hudson is not expecting to get all of the increases, but they will be making a strong case for those increases. And, you know, the numbers you cited just now is for the total bill, which includes the supply side, which Central Hudson has little to do with. Central Hudson doesn't really control the supply prices because they get it from a wholesale market. So what they're actually trying to increase are their delivery rates, which are under their purview. And if you look at just the delivery rates, the increase is over 31% for electricity and almost that for gas as well.
Hmm. And the delivery rate is the only thing that comes before the Public Service Commission. The other rate is you see reported in the newspaper like every month or something that their fuel prices are this or that, but that the Public Service Commission does not weigh in on.
That's right. We don't regulate the supply prices. Those are in the marketplace. So it's whatever the market, you know, if it's up or down.
And then, so the next logical question in all this is, like, what can we do about the greater problem? Because this has been a problem, you know, for the 2 years you've been in office. It's been a problem before that. And I think the town halls is your sort of answer to that question.
Yeah, because, you know, we want people to think about the short-term goal, which is stopping these rate hikes. Then, of course, we have to think about the medium-term goals, which is how to reform and regulate these utilities. But I also want people to start thinking about the long-term goal, which is replacing corporate utilities with publicly owned energy systems. So in the town hall, we spend a good portion of the time sharing stories from other fights that have happened at a different time in different places. You know, people have come together to beat corporate utilities before. I share a story from Canada that happened in, you know, that started in 1899, when a few folks organized to take over their privately owned utility or to compete against their privately owned utility. And this was in Ontario, Canada. And after a long fight, they won. There's a story from Massena, New York, which is up in North Country. They came together, fought together for 7 years, and the town purchased their corporate utility. And now they have some of the cheapest and cleanest energy in the state, you know. So, and there's a fight going in Long Island. There's a fight going in Maine. There's a fight going in Rochester. So I want to put this in context a little bit of the bigger fight that people have to have a democracy in their energy system. And I want people to feel emboldened by looking at these other fights and realizing that this is a possibility. You know, our road doesn't end with just trying to hold current utilities accountable. We could actually change the ownership type of these utilities.
Yeah, I would add municipal Wi-Fi into that as another thing that people don't really imagine could be, but there's totally no reason that it couldn't be.
Yeah, and actually there are many community-owned utilities that, because they are a community-owned utility, they serve several things at once. If you have the infrastructure to serve electricity, actually it means you also have the infrastructure to serve Wi-Fi. So it's a total impossibility that there could be a publicly owned distribution utility that is doing both.
So why is it that utilities aren't public institutions, that they're out to make private money?
You know, the short answer is that the private, you know, so-called entrepreneurs have tried to capture the market ever since electricity became a possibility for mass use. You know, they saw it as an opportunity, and they got into the business of electricity. And right then and there, the folks who saw it as a public good started their fight for publicly owned power. You know, so this conflict between profit and public good is right at the origin story of electricity. You know, when FDR created the New York Power Authority in New York, he did it specifically to counter the influence of what he called hydro barons, right? So I think it's been a conflict of different interests, private interests and public interest. That's been the story since the beginning. And the private side has won because they've had more political power. They've had more money to spare. They're often, you know, these are companies often owned by people with, you know, means of spending. So, for example, if you look at Maine right now, Maine is going to vote in November on a ballot referendum that asks people if they would like a new utility to replace the current one that would be run with an elected board and so on, basically a consumer-owned utility. And the incumbent utility, the corporate utilities, have outspent that campaign by 17-1. And that's the story, right? That it's who has more power, who is more committed. And it's very difficult to beat the other side with lots of money, with lots of powerful and influential lawyers. And on the other side, you have to sort of manage a large group of ordinary people who have to be very disciplined about sticking together despite many bumps, despite many disheartening developments. And on that side, things are more difficult to keep that fight together. You know, so that's sort of the the story arc of how these fights go. But then we look at, you know, in our town hall, we share the story of Massena, because that's a story that shows that despite many setbacks, you know, every few years they had a setback and the town stuck together and they got it done. So the conclusion there is it can be done, but it's not easy. And there's lots of profits to be made if it's private, because private utilities actually have guaranteed profits that the state laws allow them. You know, so based on their capital investments, they can claim a return on equity that is approved. So Central Hudson right now has a return on equity rate of 9%, and they're asking for it to be increased to 9.8%, which essentially means that they are not only asking for more expenses to be covered, they're also asking for more guaranteed profits to be locked in, and that translates to tens of millions of dollars.
Well, I was just thinking when you told the story about the vote in Maine that Central Hudson officials probably would not want to have that same vote locally. It seems like they're like one of the most unpopular local institutions that I could think of.
You know, while that's true, it is very difficult to organize a vote of that scale. You know, we're talking about such a large number of people, and you know, many people who are upset with Central Hudson sometimes still feel like, well, maybe they're trying their best. So it is like a challenge of, you know, political organization and making sure people understand that they could have much more, that they could have a service that is, you know, that is funded and that exists to serve them and not to serve shareholders. So that's what we're hoping to do through these town halls, is to sort of put a spotlight on that idea. Like, hey, we could actually be fighting for a completely different vision, you know, where we don't have to feel like we have to go up against Central Hudson every few years. Maybe we just have a system where we're not thinking about the utility bill because it's a very small fact of our life and it's steady, it's taken care of. And it's not throwing other aspects of our life into disarray. You know, are we paying, what are we going to pay for, groceries or utilities or rent, which is the fact of life for people right now, is that they are having to choose between these different types of very basic bills.
So I'll push back ever so slightly that maybe some people don't think Central Hudson is doing their best when their bills were fine. When
right.
People were reading their meters, they saw the guy or the girl every time they once a month or whatever. Then that person went away, and then they got socked with thousands of dollars in bills, weirdly timed, everything, you know, all kinds of things.
Yeah.
And now they see at least on our property here, we see the meter readers again, and we don't have problems with our bills anymore, where we did a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying you guys have actually succeeded in getting them to read meters again, right?
Yeah. And they're saying they will end estimated billing as well. They are saying that, you know, that most of the issues are addressed, but we are finding that it's not the case for most people. But the fact is that Central Hudson was an issue even before the billing errors, And this billing error has given us an opportunity to talk about that. And I think that's what happens, is like sometimes when the alternative isn't very obvious, you don't really think much about something as a problem. But when you realize what could exist as an alternative, then maybe you do want that thing. Maybe there's a spark that goes in your political will to fight for that thing, you know? So we're going to see if there's an appetite for that through these town halls, how people respond to these other stories where instead of dealing with regulating utilities, they actually just made it a public good.
And this might be an issue where you have a rare bipartisan chance. Republicans and Democrats in office both are getting calls about Central Hudson, right, for the past couple of years. So there might be a willingness to do something maybe that they wouldn't do because the issue is so large locally.
Yeah, and, you know, the one thing that Republicans will do is they will say, oh, you know, the bills are going up because of the climate goals. You know, that's their talking point. And actually, if you dig into the details, Central Hudson's sort of climate initiatives are very a small portion of the proposal they're putting forward. But we also do have to, you know, start moving towards a cleaner climate setup. It's just a question of who should pay for it, because in our opinion, Central Hudson makes a lot of profits and they can afford to pocket that expense, that necessary expense. And why should we see a double-digit rate increase to fund those initiatives, you know, because we do have lots of questions about what's happening with our money, right? We paid for this botched billing system rollout. Everything that is broken about Central Hudson, we paid for it, you know? So I think that the talking point is a little bit different. However, if you look at the story of Canada, Ontario, Canada in 1899, that was actually a fight won by conservatives. In that story, the Liberals were allied with the private utilities, and the conservative party was like, no, like this needs to be for the people. So that's an example of like how it can be in reality, it's a bipartisan issue, but how it can be politicized on both sides. And if we look at Massena, New York, both Republicans and Democrats support their publicly owned utility because they have seen its success. And now to take that away from people would be foolish, you know, would be politically foolish. And so now it's not an issue that's along party lines in that small town.
And to your question about who is to pay, it's kind of also a question about like when or where the money is directed. Like, we're already paying way more in emergency disaster you know how many disasters there have been in Ulster County this year, right? There's been that's part of the equation with the switching to renewable energy or not. The cost paying now or paying later.
Yeah, and you know, one flag we have is on the money they will be spending on replacement of gas pipes. And that's really a flag for us, because we shouldn't be spending lots of money right now on an infrastructure that will be obsolete and stranded assets soon. We could be looking at alternatives to replace aging gas pipes, for example. We could be looking at microgrids, right? We could be looking forward into replacing it with something that is not more of the same. So those are the kind of things in which we can have a say through this rate case for what they should be spending on. And our office has signed up as an official party to the rate case, so we will be able to make an official testimony that has more weight than the public comments, and we will also be able to participate in the closed-door negotiations that happen down the line.
All right, so I think I always ask this question near the end of interviews with you, is what can people that are listening actually do about this issue? I mean, tell us all the different ways, including attending the 7 town halls.
Yeah, so we actually did do our first one yesterday. It was great. People were excited. And I think the closest ones to you might be the one in Saugerties and Woodstock. So we're doing one in Saugerties on October 3rd, 6:30 p.m. That's the Tuesday night. And I'm going to give you the link in a bit. And the Woodstock one is October 5th. That's a Thursday night, 6:30 p.m. In case those fill up, there's also Olive Town Hall, and that's going to be October 19th, 6:30 p.m. And all of these details are at our link, which is bit.ly/AD103energy. That's AD as in Assembly District, and that's bit.ly as in bit.ly. But I know that on radio, this can be a handful of information to register, so we have also been giving out our office phone number, which is, you know, if you're like, oh, you said something but I missed it, it's 845-338-9610. We are in the process of moving offices. We just packed and moved our things today, but somebody will get back to you if you're trying to get to one of these town halls. And the other thing is, we are also collecting stories, and we are encouraging people to submit online comments, which you can pretty much do throughout the rate case. And the link for that is bit.ly/central-hudson-story.
All right, and then you also recommend folks, if you're not their representative in Albany, to contact their own representative in Albany about this issue?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we have, I talked about the medium-term goals. We have lots of bills that would make the regulation of utilities better. For example, things like, should they be allowed to use ratepayer money for political contributions? You know, we already have some protections in that arena, but we're trying to strengthen it. So there are bills like that. And then I have a bill to just completely ban late fees and utility shutoffs if the utility is being investigated. So right now, NYSEG and Central Hudson are being investigated, and that should mean that there should be no late fees and non-payment shutoffs during this time, and also that consumers should be notified within 3 days of the investigation, because part of the problem is many people are out of the loop because, even these hearings, nobody's getting a notice in their mail saying there's a hearing. You know, you have to find out through avenues that you might not be reading or you might not be listening to. So there's lots of great bills, and hopefully there's going to be more, but every legislator should be supporting those.
And I think we started talking about how many people are in arrears and how many businesses are in arrears, and it's both up 1,000%. What do you recommend to folks in that situation?
You know, for our constituents, we have been intervening on their behalf and trying to get a more clear answer from Central Hudson on what is safe for them to do, you know, basically flagging their cases so that they're not getting lost in the storm of complaints they've been getting from ratepayers. But since you're outside my district, you could contact your legislator's office for similar help, or you could also contact the Department of Public Service. They have a unit that are helping people with these billing issues.
And up here, our state Senate representative, Michelle Hinchey, has been doing a lot of the similar work mm-hmm. that you've been doing on this issue, too.
Yeah.
So she's somebody else that people can contact.
Yeah.
All right. Sarah Hanna-Stresta, thank you so much for joining us. Is there information on your website, too, about the town halls? There's a lot of stuff there.
I was just thinking because, like, the assembly doesn't have, like, a website. You know, we don't have an assembly website. But the easiest thing to do is call, or perhaps if you Google it, it will come up too. If you just Google Sarah Hanna Town Hall or something, I assume that it will show up.
All right. We'll try to get it up on our community calendar page too, so people can look for it there too.
Great.
Thank you so much for joining us today and getting us up to date on this big local issue. from his 2022 solo electronic record, local drummer, percussionist, and jazz legend Bobby Previtt, that was Pioneer from his Dark Current album. We want to catch you up with the goings-on about town in the WGXC community calendar, all sorts of local events that you can attend in person or virtually, and they are all listed online at WGXC.org, where there is an add an event button on the community calendar page, where if you have an event that you're putting on in the community, you're helping to promote, you're helping to organize, you can press the add an event button and cut and paste all the information about the event, and soon enough, folks like me will be reading about your event on the radio. Folks around the world will see it live in the WGXC community calendar online at WGXC.org. Thursday, September 21st, Hudson's Thursday Market is at the Public Square, 4 to 7 p.m., with all sorts of local vendors. Then at Dewey Hall at 6:30 p.m. Thursday, Moonshine Holler performs. They are a duo of Paula Bradley and Pete Killen, and also Sergeant Seedu performs. That's at Dewey Hall in Sheffield on Thursday, September 21st. Also Thursday, September 21st, up in Troy at No Fun, the Richard Lloyd Group performs. That includes the legendary guitarist from Television. Also, Rabid Children and the Men Who Loved Music are on the bill, 8 to 11 Thursday, September 21st at No Fun in Troy. Friday, or Saturday, September 23rd, the East Nassau, New York Repair Cafe is being held. That's at the Hoag's Corner Firehouse in East Nassau. You can bring your toaster that doesn't work and they'll try to fix it or show you how to fix it. It's put on by the Columbia NE Repair Cafe and the Climate Smart Committees of Chatham, New Lebanon, and Austerlitz in the village of East Nassau. So Repair Cafe, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. this coming Saturday, September 23rd at Hoag's Corner Firehouse in East Nassau. Saturday, September 23rd is also the 10th annual Berkshire Pottery Tour at various locations across the border there. There's a postcard show at the Mountaintop Historical Society in Palinville Saturday, 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. That's at the Ulster and Delaware train station on the Mountaintop Historical Society campus. It's also Dalmatian Day Saturday at the Museum of Firefighting in Hudson. That's from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Dalmatian Day is back with all those dogs. I'm not sure there's 101, but there's a bunch of Dalmatians that are going to be on Harry Howard Avenue on Saturday. The Phoenix Web Collective up in Hunter hosts a My Body is Beautiful Authentic Poetry Workshop Saturday, September 23rd. That's from 1 to 3 p.m. Every week in Catskill at the United Methodist Church from 1:30 to 3 p.m. is the Catskill Saturday Ukulele Jam. That's at 40 Woodland Avenue where the Catskill United Methodist Church is. The Crystal Radio Sessions are returning to the Ankrum Opera House this Saturday, September 23rd, 7 to 9 p.m. All sorts of short fiction from writers in the Hudson Valley and the Berkshires at the Ankrum Opera House this Saturday, September 23rd. Sunday, September 24th, again, the My Life in Color Authentic Poetry Workshop is at the Phoenix Web Collective from 1 to 3 p.m. up on the mountaintop in Hunter. The Traditional Irish Music Jam is at the Shamrock House from 2 to 5 p.m. on Sunday, September 24th, and many other Sundays throughout the year. And Sunday, September 24th, a great show down in Kingston at the Lace Mill. The cellist Julia Kent is performing with the guitarist Alexander Turnquist, who now lives in Kingston, used to live up here in Hudson. And Liam Singer, who runs the Avalon Lounge in Catskill, he's going to perform on the piano there at the Lace Mill. So that's from 4 to 7 p.m., Sunday, September 24th. At the Lace Mill in Kingston. All these events are on the WGXC community calendar online at WGXC.org.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. Porcupine Soup reports that another hiker died on the Greene County mountaintop last weekend, but this time it appears to be from natural causes. On September 16th, a 50-year-old New Jersey man complained of chest discomfort and breathing difficulty before collapsing on the Diamond Knot Trail in the Hunter-Westkill Wilderness near Hunter.
When Greene County paramedics arrived, they determined the man was deceased. New York State police are investigating, but did not release the man's name. There have been several accidents on the mountaintop this summer, including a 16-year-old male dying August 8th at Fawn's Leap in Haines Falls. Read more about this story in Porcupine Soup. Mid-Hudson News reports that Columbia County had the lowest unemployment rate in the Hudson Valley in August, and Greene County had the highest. Both unemployment rates were unchanged from a year ago, with Columbia County at 3% unemployed and Greene County at 3.8%. Dutchess County reported 3.3% unemployment rate, while it was 3.5% in Ulster County. All Hudson County valleys were below the statewide unemployment rate of 4.4%. And you can read more about this story in Mid-Hudson News. News 10 reports that Leah Penniman, the co-founder of Soul Fire Farm in Rensselaer County, is a recipient of the 28th Heinz Awards for the economy. Penniman will get an unrestricted cash reward of $250,000. Soul Fire Farm teaches regenerative farming best practices and land stewardship to Black, Indigenous, and people of color. The 80-acre nonprofit farm has youth education programs, urban plantings, mobilization training, and a community-supported agricultural program with more than 38,000 people participating in the trainings last year. Penniman said, and I quote, "We have a very ambitious mission, which is justice in the food system. We want to train and equip and support the generation of Black and brown farmers. Stewarding our own land, growing our own food, educating our own youth, participating in our own health and justice systems, this is the source of real power and dignity." End quote. Read more about this story at the News 10 website. And that wraps up the WGXE News Update. You can visit our website at WGXE.org for local weather updates, public meetings, a community calendar, or COVID-19 updates. And while you're there, please click on the donate button to become a WGXE sustaining supporter or make a one-time donation. From the WGXE Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a pleasant tomorrow. And now, here is your WGXE weather update. Well, on Thursday, it will be sunny with a temperature high near 69 degrees. On Thursday night, it will be partly cloudy with a temperature low of around 48 degrees. And on Friday, mostly sunny with a temperature high near 70 degrees. And on Friday night, mostly cloudy with a temperature low of around 51 degrees. And that is your weather update from WGXE, 90.7 FM, radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia counties.
In the end, the same as the beginning. In the beginning, the same as the end. In the end, the same as the beginning. In the beginning, the same as the end. In the end, the same as the beginning. In the beginning, the same as the end. In the end, the same as the beginning. In the beginning, the same as the end. In the end, the same as the beginning. In the beginning, the same
In the end, the same.
the sea is the air. In the end, the seamless in the beginning, the seamless the end. In the end, the seamless the beginning. In the beginning, the sea is the end. In the end, the sea is the beginning. In the beginning, the sea is the end. In the end, the sea is the beginning. In the beginning, the sea is the end. In the end, the sea is the beginning. In the beginning, the sea.